Estás escuchando Aftersight. Esta grabación está destinada solamente para personas ciegas y con baja visión.
La programación regular de este podcast no está disponible en este momento. Esperamos que disfrute de esta transmisión especial de AINC.
This is Chris Bowers Castillo of Kiltro, and you're tuned to KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver.
Support comes from Paradise Found Records, a proud supporter of KGNU's Radio Week. Located at 1646 Pearl Street in Boulder, presenting a live broadcast of KGNU's program, The Afternoon Sound Alternative, on Thursday, May 23rd from noon to 3 p.m. More information can be found at kgnu.org.
Support comes from the Dickens Opera House, located upstairs at 320 Main Street in Longmont, a destination for live music, entertainment, and dining, available for private events. Reservations and a calendar of events can be found at thepassenger.restaurant.
The struggle continues.
This is described to us by the head of the Haiti World Food Program. It's the worst humanitarian disaster since the 2010 earthquake. They need food. They need everything. It's an awful, awful circumstance.
Welcome to La Lucha Sigue. The struggle continues. A bi-weekly radio magazine with a grassroots perspective on the news of Latin America and the Caribbean.
This show was produced on May 20th, 2024.
A program is dedicated to giving a voice to our compañeras and compañeros who are struggling for social justice and equality.
It's just awful. I mean, you're seeing children who are quite clearly, severely malnourished.
In the news this week.
The annual May 15th commemoration of the violent expulsion of over 750,000 Palestinians from their homelands by the newly created nation-state of Israel in 1948 is commemorated around the world as the Day of the Nakba, of the catastrophic dispossession of Palestinians from their homes, their possessions, and their livelihoods. Nakba commemorations were held across Latin America, a region that has been among the leaders of the global movement for Palestinian rights and which has the largest Palestinian population outside of North Africa and southwestern Asia. On May 16th, Colombian President Gustavo Petro announced that Colombia is willing to participate in a United Nations peacekeeping force in the occupied Palestinian territories. In addition, President Petro said that Colombia would also provide medical personnel to care for the injured Palestinian population. The Colombian president was responding to the Arab League's proposal that the United Nations deploy a peacekeeping force that would remain in the occupied territories until the two-state solution is implemented. On May 13th, the United Nations General Assembly overwhelmingly passed a resolution to expand the rights of the State of Palestine at the International Forum, and it urged the United Nations Security Council to grant Palestine full membership. The UN ambassador from Cuba, which was one of the sponsors of the resolution, said that the United States is abusing its veto power by blocking the majority position of the international community in regard to the historical injustice that has prevented Palestinians from participating in the United Nations with equal rights. Only two nations in the Americas voted against the resolution. They were the United States and the Biden administration's newest South American ally, Argentina. The other nations that voted against the resolution were Chechnya, Hungary, Micronesia, Papua New Guinea, Nauru, Palau, and Israel. On tonight's program, we'll report on the results of the May 5th general election in Panama, where the surging human migration, ongoing drought, and increasingly sophisticated criminal groups are converging in what is quickly becoming a regional crisis. And we'll have a comprehensive report on the crisis of governance in Haiti and on efforts to deploy an international stabilization mission to the French-speaking Caribbean nation.
Now the news.
The political situation in Haiti remains unstable despite the establishment of a 9-member transitional executive committee that has been empowered to function as a president by committee that would name an interim prime minister and that would organize a general election by February of 2026. The so-called Transitional Presidential Council, which is known by its French initials as the CPT, broke into two factions within a week after being sworn in on April 25th. On April 30th, four of the seven voting members of the nine-member CPT issued a manifesto in which they described themselves as an unbreakable bloc that would rule by consensus with no concern or regard for the opinions of the CPT's other three voting members or of the two non-voting observer members.
On May 13th, the so-called Bloc of Four within the CPT announced the reopening of the search for a new prime minister because of the many objections to the Bloc of Four's first choice, longtime politician Fritz Bellizaire. The CPT said that it would accept applications from potential candidates from May 13, the day of the announcement, until May 17, the day of our editorial deadline, so we cannot report on the identities of the newest candidates for Haitian Prime Minister.
One regularly updated website with comprehensive coverage that we have found to be objectively accurate is Haiti Libre. That's Haiti, Libre.com. In its announcement, the Bloc of Four-controlled CPT insisted that all candidates for prime minister must be sponsored by entities that have formally signed on to the April 3rd agreement that created the Transitional Presidential Council. In addition, all applicants for interim prime minister were required to submit a sworn statement in which they agree that, if they are selected for the job, they will submit their complete police record, their income tax returns, and a certified declaration of their personal assets within 30 days of their appointment. On the same day that the fragmented CPT announced the resumption of their search for an interim prime minister, heavily armed men assaulted the main customs facility in the northern Haitian port city of Cap-Haïtien, where they threatened workers, vandalized the premises, and closed the customs checkpoint. Haiti's Customs Enforcement Agency, which is known by its French initials as the AGD, said that the attack was an act of revenge by weapons smugglers in retribution for a major seizure of firearms and ammunition by Cap-Haïtien customs officials on April 5th.
On May 14th, the independent Haiti Libre news portal reported that the group that attacked the Cap-Haïtien customs offices have subsequently begun to hunt for the customs agency's inspectors and employees. The CPT is dependent on the deployment of a 2,000-member multinational stabilization force that will be led by a specially trained elite unit of 1,000 paramilitary police officers from the Eastern African nation of Kenya.
The first tranche of 200 Kenyan security specialists were reportedly going to be deployed to Haiti prior to May 23rd, when the Kenyan president is scheduled to visit Washington, D.C. But on May 16th, a Kenyan political party filed a lawsuit to suspend the deployment on constitutional grounds. According to the legal challenge by the Third Way Alliance Kenya political party, the deployment is a violation of a January court order prohibiting the deployment as unconstitutional and illegal. The legal challenge is a developing story that was unresolved as of our editorial deadline on May 17. The president of the East African nation of Kenya, William Ruto, is scheduled to make an official state visit to Washington, D.C., where he will meet with U.S. President Joseph Biden on Thursday, May 23. Kenyan President Ruto is reportedly hoping that his high-profile visit with the U.S. president will distract attention from the triple crisis that he is facing at home due to deadly floods, escalating public debt, and a growing scandal over his government's fertilizer subsidies. The International Police Mission to Haiti, which has been facilitated by the United Nations but which is not an actual UN peacekeeping operation, is expected to include 2,500 members, including 1,000 officers from Kenya's elite paramilitary police. In addition to Kenya, the other nations that are deploying security personnel with the International Police Mission to Haiti are Burundi, Chad, Chile, Grenada, Jamaica, Nigeria, Mauritius, and Paraguay.
On May 14th, the New York Times reported that selection of the Kenyan members of the stabilization mission began last October, when the first contingent of 500 officers and their support personnel, including medics, began training for the Haitian mission. The New York Times interviewed members of the Kenyan mission to Haiti who were not identified because they were not authorized to speak publicly.
According to the May 14th report, the participants in the Haitian mission were chosen from Kenya's General Service Unit and from the Administrative Police, two paramilitary units that are used for riot control, border surveillance, rural law enforcement, and for presidential security. The members of the Kenyan mission to Haiti said that they had been trained by Kenyan and by U.S. personnel, and that the training included an orientation in the methods of operation of Haiti's criminal organizations. The Kenyan police officers told the New York Times that they were also given classes on French, on human rights, and on Haitian history, including the history of previous failed international interventions in Haiti. According to the New York Times, the Kenyans insisted that the previous interventions in Haiti had failed because the Haitians had perceived the UN peacekeepers as occupation forces, whereas the goal of the Kenya-led stabilization mission is to support the local police and to protect civilians. The Kenyan police officers said that, along with the prestige that they would enjoy for serving abroad, they were motivated by the additional pay that they would receive for serving in the mission. The regular salary for the Kenyan officers who will deploy to Haiti is $350 a month. According to the New York Times, a Kenyan task force has recommended that their pay be increased to $470 a month, but there have been no announcements of an official decision.
Some of the Kenyan officers, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said that they are in debt and unable to properly support their families, that they had not been told what their salaries would be after their deployment in Haiti, and that they had not been told what compensation their families would receive if they were killed while on the stabilization mission. The Kenyan paramilitary police officers told the New York Times that they have not been given a date for their deployment, but that they expected that they would arrive in Haiti sometime in May. A second contingent is reportedly being prepared for deployment.
The U.S., which is largely financing the plan, has expedited preparations for the arrival of the multinational force by constructing the mission's base of operation at Haiti's main international airport. The director of the Africa program of the Belgium-based International Crisis Group, Murithi Mutiga, told the New York Times that the Kenyan government has not adequately explained the Haiti mission's objectives to Kenya's citizens. The International Crisis Group's Mutiga said that the lack of public understanding of the mission creates a significant political risk for President Ruto, especially if there are a substantial number of casualties. The deployment to Haiti has prompted fierce debate in the Kenyan bicameral parliament, as well as among cabinet-level officials and in the Kenyan courts. Kenyan human rights observers and social justice advocates have also sought to prevent the deployment by asserting that the Kenyan police's history of abuse, brutality, and unlawful killings makes them unsuited to lead a multinational law enforcement mission. With Kenyan police officers expected to be the first to arrive in Haiti, some security experts have questioned their readiness to support Haiti's police and to confront the well-armed and highly organized gangs that have taken control of much of the Haitian capital city of Port-au-Prince.
Haitian gang leaders have said that they will fight the multinational police force, raising concerns of an escalation in violence in a country where thousands have been killed in recent months and where over 350,000 people have fled their homes in the past year. The Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, Murithi Mutiga, said that even though the security officers chosen for the mission are some of Kenya's best trained, the Haitian mission is new territory for the Kenyan forces, adding, quote, "They will essentially be venturing into an unknown path where the risks remain considerable," end quote.
You're tuned into La Lucha Sigue, produced at KGNU. For the rest of tonight's show, we'll report on Panama's May 5th general election, in which the presidency is decided by a simple plurality. On May 8th, Panama's conservative president-elect, José Raúl Mulino, said that one of his first acts would be to propose the construction of massive water reservoirs for the Panama Canal, whose operations have been severely affected by the region's ongoing drought. The Panamanian president-elect said that the proposal will be his first priority because of the need to restore the revenue that has been lost when the canal's operations were restricted by the lack of rain that is needed to replenish the water that is required to raise and lower ships as they pass through the canal's locks. 64-year-old Mulino won Panama's May 5th presidential election after he replaced former President Ricardo Martinelli, who was prohibited from running for office after being convicted of money laundering.
Panamanian President-elect José Raúl Mulino, began the electoral campaign as Martinelli's vice presidential candidate, but Martinelli was barred from the presidency after Panama's Supreme Court upheld a money laundering conviction, sentencing him to 128 months in prison. Martinelli, who was polling frontrunner when he was banned, has campaigned for Mulino over video from the Nicaraguan embassy, where he has sought refuge in order to avoid being arrested by Panamanian authorities.
Although Mulino was lesser known than Martinelli, the former president endorsed his campaign, which used the slogan, "Martinelli is Mulino, Mulino is Martinelli." Mulino, who has promised that his administration will be pro-investment and pro-business, will have to confront a nearly $50 billion national debt that is half again more than the country's annual gross domestic product of nearly $35 billion. Mulino has said that his administration will reduce what he described as unnecessary public spending while stimulating the economy by investing in major infrastructure projects. The Panamanian president-elect said that he would seek to raise revenues through more efficient tax collection rather than by raising tax rates. Mulino hopes to improve foreign investors' confidence in Panama, whose international investment ratings fell last November after the government ordered the closure of a large copper mine that is owned by the Canadian First Quantum Minerals Corporation. The Cobre Panama copper mine was shut down following the Panamanian Supreme Court's ruling that the government's contract with the Canadian First Quantum Mining Company is unconstitutional. Immediately after the mine's forced closure, the Fitch Investment Ratings Service downgraded Panama's debt to speculative grade due to the loss of the mine's revenues to the country's treasury.
Two other major ratings companies, the S&P and Moody's, both said that they would keep Panama's investment-grade rating while they monitor the Mulino administration's performance. The International Monetary Fund announced that it expects the Panamanian rate of economic growth to slow from 7.5% in 2023 down to 2.5% in 2024, largely due to the decision to close the massive mine. President-elect Mulino has reportedly spoken with various world leaders, including U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Brazilian President Inácio Lula da Silva.
After talking to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, President-elect Mulino said that he would streamline the process for U.S. companies to invest in Panama. And, after talking to Brazilian President Lula da Silva, the Panamanian president-elect said that he was in favor of joining the South American Trade Association that is known by its Spanish acronym as Mercosur. The winners of the May 5th Panamanian election will be inaugurated on July 1st. The May 5th election was widely seen as a rejection of Panama's political status quo, with no single party winning control over Panama's unicameral Congress. The ruling Democratic Revolutionary Party, a center-left party that was founded in 1979 by General Omar Torrijos, experienced the worst losses in its history despite being Panama's biggest political party. Due to constitutional term limits, Panama's incumbent president, Laurentino Cortizo of the Democratic Revolutionary Party, was prohibited from running for a second consecutive term. So, his vice president, José Gabriel Carrizo, ran in his place. Vice President Carrizo ended in sixth place with less than 6% of the vote, while the party lost many congressional and local elections, including numerous mayorships.
José Raúl Mulino, who represented a coalition of the conservative Realizing Goals and Alliance parties, won the May 5th election with 34.3% of the vote, nearly 10 points ahead of the second-place candidate in a race in which the presidency is won with a simple plurality. Mulino was selected to be the presidential candidate of the Realizing Goals party after former president Ricardo Martinelli was disqualified from running in early March due to his recent conviction on charges of corruption.
President-elect Mulino has a long history in government, having served in various occasionally concurrent cabinet ministries as former President Ricardo Martinelli's justice minister from 2009 through 2010, as Martinelli's governance minister from 2009 through 2014, and as his public security minister from 2010 through 2014. Molino, who has said that the U.S.'s southern border has moved to Panama, has announced that he plans to close migration routes through Panama and to repatriate migrants who are detained while traveling through the southernmost Central American nation. According to the Congressional Research Service, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security operates a transnational criminal investigative unit in Panama, where the U.S. supports an international biometric information sharing program that is purportedly used by Panamanian officials to detect potential security threats. On May 7th, the U.S. Congressional Research Service reported that U.S. analysts are unclear of how U.S. relations with Panama will be affected by Molino's close ties with Martinelli, whom the State Department has barred from entry to the U.S. because of his involvement in corruption. The Congressional Research Service report noted that it is also unclear of Molino's relationship with China, which is an important issue for the U.S. because Panama was the first Latin American nation to join China's Belt and Road Initiative. 20 of the 35 nations in Latin America and the Caribbean have joined the Belt and Road Initiative. Those 20 countries are Antigua and Barbuda, Barbados, Bolivia, Chile, Costa Rica, Cuba, Dominica, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Grenada, Guyana, Honduras, Jamaica, Nicaragua, Panama, Peru, Uruguay, and Venezuela. The Belt and Road Initiative, which is China's program to develop global infrastructure, transportation, and trade networks, has 150 members worldwide.
Although the incumbent Cortizo administration has suspended trade agreement negotiations with China, in March, the Panamanian government broke ground on the fourth bridge over the Panama Canal, which will be built by a consortium of Chinese state-owned companies. Panama's 2024 elections came at a time of economic and social instability as deteriorating economic conditions and a surge of irregular migration from South America and the Caribbean converge in the Central American nation. Over a half million migrants are estimated to have traveled from South America through the Darien Gap region on the Panama-Colombia border in 2023.
You're listening to Latin American and Caribbean News on La Lucha Sigue, a bi-weekly radio magazine of Latin American and Caribbean news from a grassroots perspective. In the second half of tonight's report on Panama, we'll look at the growing threats from the region's increasingly sophisticated criminal organizations. The slowing of the Panamanian economy and the uncontrolled influx of irregular migrants are providing new opportunities for criminal groups which range from street gangs and small-time extortionists to cartel-related drug traffickers, white-collar corruption networks, and increasingly corporatized human smuggling networks.
Panama's crucial geostrategic location make the country especially vulnerable to organized crime. During his three-decade-long political career, Molino has called for strict public safety policies. During his 2009 to 2014 tenure as Panama's Minister of Security, public spending on state security surged while the country's homicide rate dropped from 23 per 100,000 inhabitants in 2009 to 15 homicides per 100,000 in 2014.
According to Statistica.com, Panama's homicide rate in 2023 was 11.5 per 100,000, about the same as relatively tranquil countries such as the Dominican Republic and Uruguay. In comparison, the homicide rate in Denver, Colorado for 2023 was 6 killings per 100,000 residents. The independent Insight Crime investigative news portal quoted a Panamanian security expert, Julio Alonso, who said that the low levels of violence in Panama are an intentional tactic by criminal groups which have kept a low profile to prevent the authorities from taking action against them. Alonso noted that Panama's main gang federations have avoided much scrutiny by brokering their drug transactions outside of Panamanian territory. According to Insight Crime, criminal groups control Panama's overcrowded prison system, which they have converted into recruitment, training, and operations centers, thereby making time in jail less of a deterrent and more of a career opportunity. The crime-focused investigative news service noted that Panama's prison population grew nearly 50% from 2012 to 2024, reaching an incarceration rate of over 560 detainees per 100,000 residents. In comparison, two other Latin American nations that are experiencing similar crises in their prisons, Ecuador and Paraguay, both have incarceration rates of less than 200 per 100,000 residents. Panama has long been a focus of political and economic corruption due to the economic importance of the Panama Canal, to the bottleneck created by the narrow isthmus, and to the country's loose economic regulations.
All eight of the presidential candidates in the May 5th election, including Mulino, promised to launch corruption crackdowns if they were elected. Mulino, whose public safety policies have reportedly lacked a strong anti-corruption component, was himself jailed for 6 months in 2015 on suspicion of embezzlement, but he was released because of procedural errors that caused the case against him to be dismissed. Panama has made significant improvements to money laundering rules since the infamous 2016 Panama Papers scandal, a massive leak of financial documents detailing large-scale money laundering through Panama.
The country has tightened its financial regulations and procedures to make it more difficult to set up shell companies to launder money. In March, the European Union removed Panama from its list of high-risk countries for money laundering, citing its legal and regulatory reforms. Nevertheless, the Insight Crime Report noted that an ineffective judicial system and that a lack of willpower have slowed the implementation of the new anti-corruption rules. Social and political instability in Panama take on international significance because of the country's location at the geographical convergence of the Pacific with the Caribbean and the Atlantic, and at the point where South America has its only direct contact with the rest of the Americas to the north. Although the region has always been a crossroads, pre-existing migratory pressures have been exacerbated by U.S. sanctions against Venezuela and by saturation immigration enforcement along the southeastern U.S. coast, which has forced Caribbean migrants to detour overland through Central America instead of attempting a direct sea voyage to the U.S.
Organized crime groups in Colombia and in Panama have rushed to profit from the record numbers of migrants that are now crossing through the section of jungle that is known as the Darien Gap, which straddles the Panama-Colombia border. The Inside Crime Report described the situation on the Panamanian side of the border as chaotic, noting that small local gangs are perpetrating most of the robberies, kidnapping, and sexual assaults against migrants.
The lack of effective law enforcement and migration control on the Panamanian side of the border poses the risk that well-organized Colombian criminal groups such as the Gaitanista Self-Defense Forces, an illegal armed group that controls the Colombian side of the border, could expand into Panama. The deputy director of the Americas program at Human Rights Watch, Juan Papier, told Inside Crime that efforts to close the border do not address the root problems of northward migration through Central America. The Human Rights Watch official said, quote, "Trying to make crossing the Darien Gap even harder for migrants will force many to risk their lives in other, more dangerous paths, and Panama will have even less control over what is happening," end quote.
You've been listening to La
Lusiga,
produced at KGNU.
We'd like to thank Tom Moore and Aziz Rizal for Product Resistance.
Our host was Dan Rizzo.
Tonight's engineer and reader was Leo Gripruis.
Our news sources included the Inside Crime News Service, Haiti Libre, the Star newspaper from Kenya, the New York Times, the Reuters News Service, and the Congressional Research Service.
This show was produced on May 20th, 2020.
Tune in next week for Thaler Exchange.
But I asked them about the incoming forces. While they are welcome, there is also the fear that this is the thin edge of the wedge, and it's another foreign occupation coming, and Haitians are very wary of that.
Thanks for listening.
Join us during KGNU Radio Week for a night of live music, local eats, and good vibes. On Tuesday, May 21st, local band The Vipers take the stage for a special performance.